Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
Pregnancy loss under 23 weeks is not something that is often spoken about. And in Ireland, it's not even particularly officially recognised. But that can make it even more difficult for those who experience it. With us is Professor Keelan O'Donoghue, who is a consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist at Cork University Maternity Hospital and a leading researcher in the area. And I'm joined as well by Jenny Cronin, who is part of the Pregnancy Loss Research Group. Guys, you are both very welcome. Let me start, Jenny, with you, because you have a personal experience of this dating back to 2011. Is that right?
2011, yes. But I suppose my kind of recurrent story starts a little bit later. But after a long journey with infertility and IVF, I finally became pregnant. And
do you mind me asking how many cycles?
I did overall between frozen and fresh. I did 2 fresh cycles and I had 4 frozen cycles. Yes. But basically, I suppose the reality of it is the reason I'm mentioning that is because by the time you get pregnant, when it's with IVF, it feels like you've already had an endurance test. So it feels like you've been pregnant for a very long time. And then when
there must be such a sense of relief and joy when you get the news then.
Oh, yeah. Like just to put a bit of context on it, like it was really important for me. Like I was doing, I think I was doing IVF on my wedding day. You know, it was a big deal. And this baby was very, very, very much sought after. And I suppose when you have a scan with a heartbeat at 8 weeks, you think, you know, this is the time we'll share this news with our family, which we did that Christmas, back in Christmas 2013. And then I had another scan that I decided, it was at 12 weeks, but I decided to go along to it on my own because I'd had a couple of scans at that point. And there was no heartbeat. So it's what they describe a missed miscarriage. And it was absolutely devastating. Like I still remember the words and just kind of walking out of there on my own and walking home along the canal and ringing my husband and just the confusion in his voice, like, you know. And I suppose that was the first of 8 losses. Many of them were IVF, not all. But slowly it went from devastation and loss to kind of panic because I felt, you know, there's a chance that I'm actually not going to have a child here, you know.
And was the pattern always the same? Was it second scan, no heartbeat?
No, it varied. So actually, and that's a really interesting thing, even within my own story, it was, each loss was quite different. So many of them did require, many of them did have heartbeats, but not all, but they were all first trimester losses. There was one twin pregnancy and there was one episode where their heart slowed down and there was a family wedding that weekend, you know, so what you do? I went to the family wedding, you know. There were times when I was being scheduled for an ERPC and I didn't know what to do because, you know, you're waiting 5 days. What do? Do you go back to work? And in some cases, I actually did because you're so confused and you're very... The thing about it, and this is why I suppose being a person with lived experience in the group that we're in, it's so important because I felt so broken and so small and so weak and so vulnerable. But what I didn't realise is that I was grieving. I was a mother without a baby. And, you know, I speak about this all the time, that, you know, I had empty arms, but I felt very much a mother at that point, you know. And, you know, I was at the kind of, well, I won't say peak of my career, because I think that that may still be to come. But I had a job, you know, I had friendships, and I didn't belong anywhere. Like, I felt really like I fell between the cracks. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. But also, the thing about it is, what I've realized is that grief doesn't have a time frame, you know. So like, I felt, God, you know, it's only the first 12 weeks. I shouldn't really be that upset about it. You know, like, God, like, some people have babies that are born at 24 weeks and they die. So it was this kind of disenfranchised grief, you know.
And is it also difficult to share? Did you tell people? Did you keep it to yourself?
What did you do? I didn't start off telling people. And it's been a great learning in this. So at the beginning, you know, and this is something I've learned, is that you go to work and you have your professional self, which I did. And I just started a new job a year before, which I really loved. I had amazing colleagues. I had a great manager. But I was kind of, you know, I had a professional identity, and nowhere did my private life belong. My, you know, it was deeply personal. It didn't belong for me at work. But I had, you know, thankfully, I had amazing colleagues. So as time went on and I was struggling, they probably could see that I was struggling. And, you know, I met some of my friends from work yesterday on the way up here, actually. The interesting thing about it is probably that's the thing that got me through, was actually care and compassion and kindness, you know, really just basic human things. But the silence was actually the most difficult thing, or telling someone your story and feeling like, you know, invisible, you know.
Why do you feel invisible?
Because I suppose the reality of it is that it's common. Okay. So it, you know, it happens all the time. But like, when I add that time up, okay, I was pregnant for between 1 and 2 years of my life before I ever, ever, ever had a child. Okay. And, you know, people were kind to me. People tried their best. But like, it's sort of, I didn't know what way to feel. I know now, looking back in the rearview mirror, you know, it's very clear to me now, which is why I'm sitting here in front of you today, that it does matter and it does count. And we do need to acknowledge it and we do need to see it, you know. But at the time, I felt less than. I felt my body was failing me, and I felt so broken, you know.
How do we acknowledge it? Because is the language different? Is there a sense that you don't use terms like miscarriage if it is sufficiently early in the pregnancy? Is there a sense that if it is early in the pregnancy, it shouldn't be as big a bereavement as it might be later?
Yes. It's probably a bit like, I think every pregnancy loss is different. So you can't define a loss by a number of weeks. So let's say, for instance, I met this gorgeous lady who lost a baby at 22 weeks. Okay. So it fell below the threshold of a stillbirth. So she leaves the hospital, okay? She's given birth to a baby. She's gone into labor. She's given birth, okay? And she then is told that, I'm sorry, you've, by a number of days, weeks, hours, or a couple of grams, you do not meet the threshold of this baby actually mattering. It doesn't exist. So you get a certificate if it's a certain number of weeks, or you get a stillbirth certificate. But if you fall below that threshold, and it's an arbitrary, invisible line, you go home, you leave hospital with empty arms and a broken heart, is what you do. And I'm sure she identified every bit as a mother. She is a mother, you know. And what we can do for people like this lady who's grieving, probably as we're talking, is we can give her a certificate of loss. So it doesn't necessarily need to be statutory leave, you know, but it's acknowledgement. It's, this baby existed. Love does not start at 23 weeks. You know, you don't become a mother at a certain point. You become a mother when you feel you're a mother.
Keelan, let me bring you in. It must be very difficult for OBGYNs like yourself to have that conversation with women around that time.
Absolutely. And we know that we have a legal definition of stillbirth in this country. And many countries set a definition according to maybe a threshold where, if that baby had been born alive, that baby could have survived. or they set a definition according to when they're going to give entitlements, such as leave, maternity leave. And for clinicians like myself, knowing those numbers of babies who die is important. We use it to compare how we do. It's a quality indicator in our health services. And I can say all of that as a justification for why there's a certain cutoff. But if I'm actually talking to a couple and I've diagnosed that a baby has died, or I'm meeting them after their baby has been born under that 23-week cutoff, all of those things don't make any difference to them. That really rings very hollow. And I think there's a lot of things that we need to do better for pregnancy losses under 23 weeks. And I think some of that is, as you have said, Jenny, about acknowledging and recognising those pregnancy losses for the people that want it. We know, as you've said, that people's views and experiences across all types of pregnancy loss and pregnancy endings are different, and we should respect that. But for many people, that is wanted. Also, we should count those numbers because it matters to me as a clinician, and it matters to me when I'm advocating for service development or improvements, when I'm writing guidelines, to know how many miscarriages there are. We don't record any type of miscarriage in this country. There isn't a single national report or document I can direct you to that says the numbers of early pregnancy losses, those that might happen in the first trimester, or the number of second trimester pregnancies. So the only ones that are subject to national data collection are those that meet criteria to be a stillbirth or neonatal death.
Which is post 23 weeks?
Exactly,
that,
yes.
That must be very hamstringing from a clinical perspective.
So it is very hard. You hear this statistic trotted out quite a lot that there's 14,000 miscarriages in Ireland every year. And that is purely based on an estimate from a certain year when a certain report was written of 20% of the births that occurred in Ireland that year. So we don't actually know the numbers of women who have a miscarriage. Now, if you went to each of the 19 maternity units, they all have an early pregnancy clinic and they will all record those numbers in the clinic. But miscarriage is wider than that. It doesn't always happen in a hospital. It might happen at home. It might happen in primary care. So it's like anything, unless we record the numbers, we don't actually know what the problem is and how can we possibly develop or even advocate for better services if we don't know what those numbers are. Other countries are looking at this too. For example, in Australia in the last couple of weeks, big report issued on women in pregnancy showing that among Australian women, for everybody who's been pregnant, 37% of Australian women have had at least one early pregnancy loss. And they're using that data to advocate for or using that research to advocate for a national register of pregnancy losses, really pointing out that pregnancy loss, particularly that isn't reported or recorded, is a completely uncaptured public health issue.
And do you think the numbers would be similar in Ireland, more than a third, do you think, of women?
I think so, yes.
From
what we know, certainly, yes. I mean, looking again, I can comment on the numbers in my own unit. I can tell you that our numbers of miscarriages have not fallen, even though our birth rate is obviously falling in Ireland. So I know in our early pregnancy clinic, purely looking at those women in the first trimester, like you were describing, Jenny, it was probably over 2,000 women that we diagnosed with a miscarriage last year. I would look after anywhere from 40 to 50 women who've had a second trimester pregnancy loss from that 12 weeks up to that 23-week deadline. And those pregnancies aren't really counted or recorded in a way that really has an impact on the people who experience it, because, you know, we need to talk, obviously, about pregnancy loss. And if we don't, that silence increases the stigma around it for the people who experience it, as I think Jenny really eloquently described. But it also means that when you're considering pregnancy loss, it doesn't get prioritised when it comes to resources or services. It's a battle to get it seen as important. And it also comes back to what you said about it's common, so it happens. But yeah, it actually affects a lot of people. And what type of pregnancy loss it is, or how far along in the pregnancy it is, doesn't always tell you what the physical or psychological impact might be.
Am I right in saying it is talked about much less than one would expect, given how common that it is?
Yes. Yeah. And I suppose it's that whole thing, you know, it's you don't tell someone you're pregnant until you're 12 weeks pregnant. Okay. And the reason for that, probably historically, is because of loss. But like, what is that telling? Like, what is that saying? Is it saying that, you know, this is a private issue that doesn't belong anywhere? Is it saying that it's shameful to discuss or tell someone you're pregnant because it's embarrassing or shameful to say you lost it? Like, what's the subliminal, like, what's that message it's saying? And like, I feel, and it's something that I can put words on now, it's like, it's when somebody validates your experience, it's not going to change it, okay? But it's, I see you, I acknowledge you, you matter, you count, you're, you know, and you, it's sort of this anchor or this beginning of the healing process, you know. But if you feel, God, you know, I shouldn't feel this way, God, like, you know, this probably happens to everyone, you know, like, why am I struggling with it? And the thing about it is, you're not your strongest self, you know, so that's why you don't know which side is up. You don't, like, it's taken me years to, like, I'm, you know, I'm in my journey ended, thankfully, but it's taken me years to kind of be able to process it enough to be here in front of you today.
And particularly if in many of the instances that you're describing, you're going through the hormonal ups and downs of IVF cycling at the same time.
Yeah.
It is a compounding factor.
And it affects every, you know, like, it happens kind of to you. And, you know, you like, if you think about recurrent miscarriage, and I know it's very rare, unfortunately, but I was that rare statistic, you know.
How did you keep going? I mean, when you talked about the eight instances of pregnancy and more than a year of being pregnant before having a successful pregnancy, how, by the time you've had your seventh experience, do you say, I'll keep going?
Because I didn't know how to stop. I knew I wanted to be a mother. And it was the single most important thing in my life. There was no other plan. There was no other life worth living. And I'm not saying that in a kind of a dramatic sense, but I didn't know how to stop. It was actually, and we got to the stage where, and my husband, who also probably is a bit of a saint, came along in this journey. And I think men get forgotten too, you know. And I think when I'm talking about it, I think it was also really hard for him, because he was at work and he'd, like, I was a shell of myself, you know. And I have, through unbelievable friends, unbelievable family, and through counselling, and I went back and did psychology afterwards. So I ended up kind of, it has fundamentally changed me forever.
You said when you were describing how your journey ended, you said your journey ended successfully. What happened?
So I have three little miracles at home, Henry, Hugo and Sonny. And I tell them that they are my inspiration. But unlike many people.
Did they arrive concurrently or sequentially?
They're very close together. I was one of those people with kind of three people hanging off a buggy, and people would say to me, God, you're lucky. And I was like, if only you knew. But the reality of it is that most people, when they become a mother, find it difficult. But it was easy for me because it gave me my life back. But yeah.
Jenny, thank you very much, because I know it is a very personal thing to discuss on air, and we appreciate you being willing to do it. That is Jenny Cronin, who is part of the Pregnancy Loss Research Group. Thank you also to Professor Keelan O'Donoghue, consultant obstetrician and senior lecturer at Cork University Maternity Hospital and University College Cork. And a lot of texts coming in from people saying things like, I am a lady who has also walked that path. I had two babies that were not for this world. Bless them. It is still difficult 20 years later, and it only feels like yesterday. After my experiences, especially my last loss, which was absolutely terrible and traumatic, it's sad to hear that nothing has changed. These ladies who are trying to instigate change are angels. Early loss needs to be acknowledged and cared for also, as the impact on us women is life lasting. Please give them my thanks.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.